Hello and welcome to the Sports Fathers, episode 5, recorded on November 13th. Go Riders! Sigh. In today's show, we discuss the sadness of our teams losing in the CFL playoffs, we defend Darian Durant, 4 new entries into the Hockey Hall of Fame, and baseball news in November? It's all coming up next. Hello and welcome to the Sports Fathers. I'm Father Darryl Millett in the sprawling metropolis of Watson, Saskatchewan. And joining me today is Father Jeffrey Young out in Saskatoon. Hello, Father Jeffrey.
How are you doing? But Father Darryl, you're out in Watson. I'm in Saskatoon.
But that's right.
Yeah, other way around. But gotcha.
Oh, what did I say? Anyway.
Out in Saskatoon.
Oh, I see.
It's great to be here.
That's great, and a great visual for...
When you're in a Watson-centered world,
this is true.
Is out in Saskatoon.
This is very true. And the other voice that you hear is Father Andrew Schoenberger out there in St. Paul, Alberta, or in St. Paul, Alberta, and we're out there, or whatever, however that goes. Hello, Father Andrew.
Hello, hello.
All right. So this is kind of a tough podcast to record because as people know, it's been a very sad, sad time for those of us who cheer for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders and the Edmonton Eskimos in the Canadian Football League. Very sad indeed. So the first game of the weekend was...
Hey, you forgot the moment of silence.
Okay. Silence is always great on an audio podcast, isn't it? Fantastic. The first game that was played was Edmonton in Toronto at the Skydome or Rogers Centre or whatever they're calling that place nowadays. And because that game happened on a Sunday, I'm sure both of you watched it very intently, as did I, not quite.
I saw some exciting bone-crushing hits and so forth.
Oh, yeah. That one on Matt Nichols was... If I never have to see that ever again, that'll be just fine.
That was bad. That was bad.
I saw the last couple minutes of the game when it meant absolutely nothing because my mass was at 11:30. The game started at 11, Mountain Time, that is.
Well, then you should be able to get through that mass like in about a half hour.
Yeah. Actually, it was halftime when mass was over. And I looked at the score and thought, oh,
well,
really all I could say.
Well, you know, this game, it was, the score flattered Edmonton in a way. You know, the fact that Edmonton was able to get up to 20 points, 20 plus points, kind of flattered them. Because the bits that I did see, mostly in the second half, a little bit in the first half, Toronto was thoroughly outplaying Edmonton.
Yeah, well, when they get 16 points in the fourth quarter...
Well, the second quarter, Toronto scored the most ever points that's ever been scored by a single team in a single quarter in a CFL playoff game. Toronto got 31 points.
I think they should have eliminate the second quarter and make it three periods like hockey. Therefore, Edmonton would have won 26-11.
Yeah, the Riders, we're okay with that if that's been voted on.
Actually, if you just eliminate everything after the 3-minute warning, that'd be usually good.
Or if you eliminate everything in the last minute would be good for the Riders. How about that?
But we'll get to that one eventually. So here's the question. What is worse, to lose a game like that in a blowout or to lose a game like that last second? As a fan, I'm going to say, because none of us have ever actually played football, I don't think. But what do you think is, what feels worse, losing in a big blowout or losing in a close game? Because both of our teams did a bit of both this season.
Well, here's a question. Was it a good game or is it a bad game?
Well, the blowouts are usually bad games if you're on the losing end.
Yeah, but you can win a close game and it be utterly boring.
Okay, let's say a close game that was exciting, nail-biter, versus a blowout loss.
Well, at least I would be wanting to watch the entire game if it's close.
Yeah, I'd rather lose how we lost than how Edmonton lost, if that's what you're asking.
Let's put it this way. There was no drive for me to actually say I have to go watch the game when I found out it was 31-7 at the half.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing I could think of is on the flip side, it's a little easier on the heart if you lose in the blowout.
One is because then you have like four quarters to basically say, nah, we've already lost anyway.
Well,
yeah.
Three, let's give him something, you know.
It's sort of like being terminally ill for years. Is that better than, you know, in the middle of your sleep, in the middle of the night, dying in your sleep?
I love how you bring things into perspective.
Well, yes, but Jeffrey, like Jeffrey, there's a difference. So dying in your sleep is peaceful, but I think Saskatchewan did, they died like with a massive heart attack.
Yeah, like so that's what I mean. Not dying peacefully in your sleep, but being woken up by a heart attack and dying.
Oh, you guys.
That better.
You guys, everything just in so much perspective.
Well, it's sort of like, I think the realistically looking back, once not in the heat of it, I'd rather lose horribly in the Grey Cup than go back to the days when we barely made the playoffs for seasons, like four or five seasons at a time, or we were pathetic every time you showed up. Or remember when we lost to Toronto in the Grey Cup when like Doug Flutie was around
against Reggie Slack,
50 points. That didn't feel better than having too many men on the field. You know, as far as like, you know, like looking back now, that was embarrassing.
Yeah, although I think part of that's expectations though too, because in 2009 there was a real expectation that we could potentially win this thing, and especially when there were 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter and the Riders were up by 16 points. There's an expectation we're going to win.
There's a real expectation when, you know, the time ran out and we had more points than the other team. We're going to win too, but...
why do we keep bringing this thing up? It's like the most painful thing ever. Well, in football, that is.
It is. In my life, there's probably two... Yeah, well, that was a pretty bad time.
You know, one of these days, we should get 13 people to speak in this on our podcast, and it'll be a tribute to the 13th man.
Yeah.
All right, so moving along.
But Andrew, we'll never mention who the name of the 13th man or protect his identity.
It was Gaynor. It was Gaynor's fault. Gaynor the Gopher being the mascot of the Rough Riders.
I am the 13th man. All right. So what's more to be said about the Edmonton game?
Well, this is a fascinating thing, though, I think, with Matt Nichols being injured, and on Twitter he seemed pretty hopeful that he could be ready in time for training camp. But what if he is not good to go for training camp? What does Edmonton do for the quarterbacking situation, or what would you like to see them do in the quarterbacking situation besides trading for Darian Durant, which will never happen,
or trading for Stephen Giles, because they do that every couple seasons?
that's true.
You know, there is a decent option though. Did you get the backup quarterback for BC?
This is true. What's his name? Riley?
Yeah, that's who it is.
And he is a free agent, I believe, is he not?
Well, I'm not sure. That I don't know.
I seem to remember seeing that he is going to be a free agent.
What about Drew Willie or JT O'Sullivan?
Let's go. If we could get Mike Riley, because I mean, thing is that BC is going to hold on to Lule. And yet Riley's a great quarterback, so you might be able to pull him away and have him as a starter. And then, because who knows, even if Nichols comes back for 2013, would he be ready enough to be a starter? Or would he just be like the first favorite backup?
Right, which is usually the most popular guy on the team, the backup.
What happened with Kevin Glenn as well? Wasn't he Calgary? Was he supposed to be number two?
Yes.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then Drew Tate went down in the second game, and Kevin Glenn went in and brought him to the playoffs, and then was unceremoniously dumped for the playoffs.
Yeah. Oh, it's happened to the best of us.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Who else is kind of a quarterback hovering around? A lot, actually.
And do not say Casey Printers. He won't take Printers.
Where's he gone to?
Oh, he, after that one infamous game that he was with Winnipeg, or against Winnipeg, they dumped him.
Huh.
Yeah. That was the one where Giles actually beat them. But anyway.
I think they should go with Kerry Joseph all year.
39? Yeah, it's working for Montreal.
Yeah, I'm not even joking about it. I think he actually... you know, you go with him and you bring in two young guys, and you kind of, you know, you don't tell Joe that he's number one, but they kind of like get him fighting around in the training camp. Maybe one of the young guys surprises you, but kind of have this start developing guys and let him kind of be the mentor, number one, but maybe slip into number two.
Well, no, then you just make Kerry Joseph one of the coaches.
Yeah, well, I think he's going to actually go into coaching probably after this, like a quarterback coach or something. But for this next year, like, I don't know. I mean, you're right about that. Maybe that Riley guy, but there's probably not a lot of options, actually, to be honest.
No, not unless you can find someone down south.
Yeah,
I would release Giles and offer Joseph a coaching position. Go for Mike Riley and get him to try to be your starting quarterback, and have Nichols, hopefully he'll be better. We'll be optimistic. And he'll be the backup quarterback for 2013 season. Yeah.
But why would BC trade Riley? Or is Riley a free agent?
I believe he is a free agent.
Oh, yeah. He
is too.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Well, then there you go. That's either Winnipeg or I think Winnipeg also be trying to sign a quarterback.
Yes.
And I know Edmonton is tight on near the cap right now, because I know they were talking about, I think there's 8 guys on the Edmonton defensive team that are free agents this year.
Oh, wow.
Including J.C. Sherritt and Marcus Howard.
And they gotta sign those two guys.
Yeah. But I know J.C. Sherritt's been quoted to say that like the only place he wants to play is Edmonton. So
right,
we'll make it work. So we'll see where that goes.
Of course, they've also got to get on to finding a general manager as well. I've heard a few rumors that maybe Cavis Reed might move up that way, but who knows?
Well, they need him as coach, though.
Yeah.
He's still a good coach. I mean, what happened this season, you give him second or third rate quarterbacks to work with, and you expect him to do...
He messed up with that, the injury with what's his name there in that last game, playing the guys rather than resting for the playoffs.
You mean J.C. Sherritt?
Yeah, Sherritt, yeah.
Well, let's put it this way.
That was sort of coach. A rookie mistake there.
Well, no, well, hold on here. Like, there's two things there. One, you can look at that and say, hey, what the team... As fans, do we really care about J.C. Sherritt's record for most tackles in a season?
No.
See, you're talking that way, but I mean, for J.C. Sherritt, that's very important.
Yeah, but that's not what football's about. It's about the team. And the fact is, if he was playing in the game, in the playoff game, would they have been better than if not? And they would have been. And that's what the fans care about, is winning.
Well, you're right.
Remember,
he's a coach, so he's making more of a decision than that. You want, like, he put him in there to give him the chance to get the record, and he got the record.
Well, that's not a good coach, then. That's a coach, like, he's playing more, he's more for the players than he is for looking at the whole picture. And he was kind of like that with Saskatchewan, too. But
mind you, he is an assistant position then, so.
But he was definitely, you know, part of the kind of he's a very positive guy, nice guy, and all that. But I don't think he actually is a good head coach, sort of.
But Father Jeffrey,
he's new though. He's young. I'm just saying that was a mistake.
Jeffrey,
I think he wouldn't do that again.
Let's put you in there for a second. Let's put you in there. You're in there. Okay, let's just say you're
in
a position. Pick a position.
What's that? As a coach or as a player?
You pick a position that you'd want to play.
What position do I want to play? Offensive line.
Okay, you're offensive line.
I know how to play that.
Yeah, but okay, I don't know what you'd get for a record there.
Winning, because it's a team sport, and offensive line is more important than some guy's record when he gets injured and then the team gets destroyed.
Okay, I know you well enough that you would feel cheated if you were so close to getting a record and all you had to do was just do a little bit more in one game and then you got out. Let me
frame it another way, and I understand what you're saying, but if you're playing for money, of course I want to get my record. I got to make more money. But the thing is, put it the other way, if you were asked to maybe sacrifice a few points in your stats in a game, if I had a chance to win the playoffs or win even one playoff game, what player that cares more about the team and about the greater good is ever going to say, no, I would rather have more pad my stats? No real player does that. I don't even think he would.
I agree with you in terms of
coaches, media.
Oh, this is getting heated. Oh, now we're moving into talking about the common good.
But I'm saying though, that when you're, I mean, it's more than just a utilitarian, like the greatest good for the greatest number type thing too.
The needs of the many must.
But as long as that's that's your focus, the player would also be more happy because he would rather be on a winning team in the playoffs than injured on the sidelines. He'll be happy because he's going to make more money in the long run. But I don't think I think at the end of the day, you'll sacrifice something of your personal achievements for a greater team achievement, right?
I can see why Cavis Reed would put him in, but I think I'm with you, Father Jeffrey, that I don't agree with it in a team sport.
It wasn't a prudent choice. That's all I said. It's a younger coach mistake.
But I can see why he did it, though.
But here's another question, though. But I mean, like J.C. Sherritt, like he says, he's one of those guys who wants to play every minute of every game. Well, I agree with you that they very well could have rested him.
Yeah.
But at the same time, though, you know, as a coach, you're also looking at the morale of your players, the cohesion of your players, and you need to support your players. So was it a mistake? Maybe, maybe not. Well, I don't know. I don't know what's going on in that locker room. We're talking from a couple hundred kilometers away from.
Yeah, but this is a textbook. This will be textbook of why in the future other coaches presented with the same choice are not going to play that player.
Well, let's look at the flip side and segue into the other game, because for the Rough Riders, Weston Dressler was sat for the last game of the season, and he was within striking distance of. Not a record, but getting the receiving title for the season, and they sat him.
And Durant. Look at
Durant.
And Dressler's games in the first, and that's after losing five straight weeks or whatever, five straight games, and both Durant and Dressler play better than they ever, well, I guarantee it, probably one of the best games they're going to play. The rest of the team, not necessarily, but they had excellent games, and that was that on the flip side.
Now, I have a question for you.
That was a prudent decision on.
So let's, before we get too much into this, let's just set this up just in case people didn't see it. So the other game on Sunday, the other playoff game, the Western semifinal, Saskatchewan Rough Riders in Calgary against the Stampeders. One of the most exciting finishes I think that we've seen all season, I think that's pretty fair to say, in which the Rough Riders heartbreakingly lost. They were up by 1 point with 52 seconds to go. Calgary marches down the field, has one long passing play with a guy wide open, scores a touchdown, they win the game. But very entertaining, very hard on the heart. Definitely hard on the heart.
Yeah, and Dressler and Durant weren't on the field on that defense there, but no. I don't know what was going on with that. That was, you know, well, in one side of things, and was the Rider drive going offensively, not really looking at focusing on the clock and possession as well as trying to get a touchdown. That's one side. So they got a touchdown too quick, which, you know, it's better to get a touchdown too quick than none at all. I can see why they
won. Yes.
But when you're 30 yards out and you have a minute, it wouldn't have been, you know, silly just to focus on getting a couple first downs. And also because they had no timeout to be able to, because we had timeouts, you can use 26 minutes or 26 seconds to get three plays where they can't use that time. So, you know, it was a weird play. Like, it was a great catch and everything, but to be honest, it was double coverage. And our guy was, you know, 6'5" or whatever. So it ended up being awesome, but it was also kind of silly to leave a minute on the clock basically for anything, because all they needed was a field goal, right, Daryl? Like, they need like two, three first downs after they get the ball back, which is, with a minute left, most teams should be able to do.
Well, the other thing, too, that adds into the intrigue was at the very end of the first half, the Rough Riders scored a touchdown to go ahead. They not only missed the convert, but it was blocked and returned all the way down the field for 2 points. That's a 3-point swing. Then Calgary gets the ball back. They allow John Cornish to run a ton. Yeah. And they boot a field goal at the end of the half. Yeah. So there's a 6-point swing at the very end of the first half, and the Rough Riders lost by 6. Although, granted, the Calgary Stampeders went for a 2-point conversion and missed it. So,
yeah,
but that was that's a lot of points.
That was that probably made the difference, to be honest. But you never know. But this is the point about this game, though. We lost, but going in, we were the underdogs, and also I expected them to lose, and I expect them to actually lose more like Edmonton lost than us. But it was a close game, and to be honest, it was the lead change in the game was back and forth like 5 times. It was a really fun game to watch.
It was
objective about it. I'm like, yeah, sure, I wish we would have won, but I'd rather watch that a close competitive game like that than being blown out, I guess, which was the whole premise of the question we had, right?
Yes, it does showcase how exciting the CFL game can be, I think.
It was awesome, yeah. Like the run, the blocked punt that he catches and runs back for 2 points, that's pretty cool.
hasn't happened in like probably a couple decades, but anyway.
The convert. Point after touchdown.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that, Father Andrew, did you?
No, I barely saw the game.
It was crazy at the end of the first half. But they blocked the kick after the touchdown. They caught it. He ran it back. So Calgary got 2 points. Then on the kickoff, they ran it back again.
They didn't run it back, but they made a couple of long running plays.
Sorry, but they get possession of the ball, even though they just got 2 points. Yes. And then they got kicked a 55-yard field goal. What was it?
I think it was only like 52.
52 against, was it with the wind or against the wind?
I think against a slight breeze.
It was incredible field goal.
Amazing.
Like they scored like 5 points at the end of the second half with like 3 seconds left.
And it's a 6-point swing because the Rough Riders, of course, missed out on the single point as well. So
it was really bizarre.
So it was a very entertaining game, but if I can rant for a little bit,
please.
Now this is something that's been brewing all season long that I've heard on the radio station that has the Rough Rider games. They have what they call the Rough Rider roundtable after the game where callers can call in. And also every Monday during the season, CBC and the Regina Leader Post have had a joint Rough Rider chat online.
Yeah.
And one of the things that just has been bugging me to no end is that how many people have been ragging on Darian Durant, even after the playoff game in which Darian Durant threw for 435 yards, threw for 4 touchdowns. His quarterback efficiency rating is the highest it's ever been in his career. And people are still going down on Darian Durant. And I just don't understand the mentality. He had a very good season. He threw for nearly 3,900 yards, even though he didn't start in 2 games, and he missed at least a couple others, I think, by having to leave early in injury. And people are going against him. So I just, it just bugs me to no end.
Let me stop you right there, Father Darrell. For your rant, you're speaking far too kindly. You should be ranting in a rant voice. But no, people are being stupid. People are often stupid in Saskatchewan, but in this case, it's just stupid. Durant was fine. Durant played the game. He played his heart out. There was mistakes here and there, but to be honest,
the kettle's boiling over.
What the heck does Durant have to do with, when you have 40 seconds left at the end, you have deep coverage. Don't expect them to do a long pass. Like that was just, that has nothing to do with offense. Durant, Dressler, they were fine. Even, what's his name? Sheets. He wasn't the best, but he didn't fumble the ball. He didn't do anything. Durant had 1 interception, was it? And 4 touchdowns.
The O-line played fairly well, except for the very beginning. They allowed some pretty nasty sacks on Durant.
Yeah. And what did Durant do? Did he kind of just let it kind of like cave? No, he yelled at them. He said, get your head in the game. And what happened? The offense actually was good the rest of the game. The defense, which is surprising. Usually our defense is who is more reliable.
They've been ranked 2nd in the league all season as far as yards allowed.
Yeah, so anyways, the whole thing with Saskatchewan ripping apart and whatever. People, we're very lucky to have Durant as a quarterback.
Yes.
He's on, and when he's off, he's off. He was actually on that game.
And I think Bob Dice, as offensive coordinator, has been improving too, because I think this is the first season he's been the full-fledged offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And I think with this team, stay the course. You know, try to re-sign some of the free agents. I know Odell Willis is going to be a free agent, but he's expressed that he would like to come back. Loban Don is a free agent. He's also on Twitter. I saw he was expressing he'd want to come back.
Yeah.
So, you know, re-sign some of these guys, stay the course, let the young guys, you know, learn from this experience. And I think next season they could do some real damage as the Grey Cup is hosted in the city of Regina.
Yeah. Well,
great place for Edmonton to win again.
maybe they can cross over and then we'll have a...
Yeah.
Well, that would be sweet.
Can you imagine?
Actually, you know what would be really sweet? If Saskatchewan crossed over and we're the away team in their home stadium.
That would be funny.
In nothing but name would the other team be the home team, though.
This is true.
Like, they could have beer cans hucked at them.
Well, the one team would get to choose the coin toss and all that stuff.
But the last time the Riders, Regina, hosted the Grey Cup, Edmonton won.
And who was playing who?
Edmonton, Montreal.
Oh, well then it wasn't going to be very likely that we're going to win that one, were we?
No, but when I went to the Grey Cup in 2002 between Edmonton and Montreal and Edmonton, Father Travis Mierheim wore some Saskatchewan Riders.
Of course.
Rough Riders.
Yeah.
Tattooed on his cheeks and said,
sure.
And someone asked him, who's going to win the game? The Riders.
Well, of course.
That was one of those classic Travis comments. Good times.
Hey, I'd do the same thing.
All I can promise you, Father Andrew, is if Saskatchewan actually makes it to the Grey Cup next year, they could be playing Thor himself, and they'll win. If they in Saskatchewan, they'll win that Grey Cup. There would be, it's going to happen. But I don't know if they're going to actually make it to the Grey Cup. I'm not saying that. I'm saying if they make it to the game, they'll win the game. It'll be that much of an environment with the crowd there that it'll be almost impossible to hear. They'll win.
Possibly.
You just remember what it was like in Calgary, and that was only that. I mean, we were one third of the stadium or half the stadium.
We being Saskatchewan fans, because I wasn't there.
Oh, we were there. wherever the two or hosted? Three are gathered.
Where was the game hosted back in 2009?
Calgary.
Yeah, it wasn't like most of the stadium was Riders fans, as you just mentioned.
Why do we keep bringing up this 2009 Grey Cup, you guys?
Won that game?
So, the other big news from the Rough Rider game was Drew Tate. Apparently, in a TSN interview during the half, he made some sort of comment that he didn't remember the first half. And, of course, he had that major hit from Tay George, which I wouldn't be surprised if Tay George gets fined for that one. It was a helmet-to-helmet hit. And so people were making a big ado. Did Drew Tate actually have a concussion and was allowed to play? And apparently they came through with their whole concussion protocols and he passed everything. So that wasn't a problem.
He was just joking.
Yeah, he was just joking. But it is an interesting thing that this weekend in the NFL, three quarterbacks were concussed, as well as a running back. And the NFL is talking about possibly having someone on the sidelines who is nothing but a concussion specialist. So I don't know if there's a... So this is the interesting thing. Are players nowadays just bigger and stronger and playing harder and people getting more concussions? Or is it a matter of just detection? And awareness
that people are getting more
or that we're just catching them better because we're more aware of what they can do.
Well, people are bigger and heavier and stronger and moving faster, and so that's part of it. The other flip side is the equipment. The helmets and stuff are also getting a little bit better, and neck braces and stuff like that. So no, it's just everything's faster, right?
If you stop and look at, like, say, the NHL, for an example, although there isn't an NHL at the moment.
We'll get to that in a sec.
The what? KHL?
Is the fact that you look in the past and people weren't wearing helmets, equipment wasn't as good, you had far less concussions and major injuries because people were more careful, because they didn't take for granted that the equipment was going to save them from all of this.
Yeah, and the Oilers during the breaks would be shooting up and taking shots of whiskey too, but people were moving a lot slower on the ice.
Well, right? The Oilers also had Semenko as well, which I think factored into the people not wanting to hit someone like Gretzky.
It was not as a fast pace, right? And also guys were...
It wasn't as fast paced. Did you ever watch the Oilers in the 80s?
No, like the actual speed of everybody on the ice was not as fast as it is now. Like there was guys that would whip around people and so forth, but the pace, people skate faster now. Everything from the way we even sharpen skates is way better now than it would.
Equipment's a lot lighter nowadays too.
It's lighter. These guys are like, yeah, it's much quicker and the hits are harder, like, and the shots are faster. These are clear, right?
Even things like conditioning. I remember reading the 1972 Summit Series. Canada lost the first few games of the series because basically a number of the Canadian players who were playing were out of shape. They didn't really work out in the summer. But nowadays, I mean, that never happens. They're working out constantly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I don't think the hockey's better, Andrew. I'm just saying it was it's faster, harder, and a little crazier. That doesn't mean the hockey is more entertaining to watch. There's a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, though, of course, as we know, breaking news from the NHL, the lockout on day 59 is still on.
Yeah. And
it looked like there might have been some hopefulness over the weekend as they were meeting, but apparently they still can't agree on several major issues. Eventually, I think everybody sees that they're going to get to a 50-50 revenue split, but how to handle existing contracts and these kind of things, I guess, is a major sticking point, sadly.
Well, you know what's interesting is that Dan Tenser this evening on 630 CHED just talked about how the league and the players are nose-to-nose right now, but rather than shaking hands, they're content to have a staring contest.
It's bizarre. But on much happier news, there were four, I think, very deserving guys who were just added to the Hockey Hall of Fame. Pavel Bure, Matt Sundin, Adam Oates, and Joe Sakic. And for me, the memories I have of each of these guys, Bure would be, unfortunately, a sad one. 94, when he knocked the Calgary Flames out of the playoffs and that famous overtime goal. Yeah, thanks, Andrew. Matt Sundin, well, he played for Toronto, so I can't say I intentionally watched him all that much. He always seemed to me to be pretty classy, though. I don't know.
Sundin?
Sundin.
Oh.
Didn't really watch him a heck of a lot, though.
A Swede?
Not, seemed like a pretty classy guy to me. Adam Oates, I saw this story on cbc.ca from Brett Hull, where Brett Hull was saying, because Adam Oates, of course, played with Brett Hull for a number of years and racked up a pile of points.
Yeah.
So Hull said he always felt bad for the guy on the left wing of that line, because Adam Oates would, I think, center that line, and Hull was right wing, I think. But yeah, he always felt bad for the guy on the left wing, because he'd come to the bench and he'd ask Adam Oates, "Did you see me? I was wide open." And Adam would look at the guy and say, "Yeah, I saw you, but who do you think I want to pass it to, you or Brett Hull?"
Yeah, Oates was one of the most underrated players, I think, in the NHL.
Absolutely.
And another guy like that was Ron Francis.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
These are like huge playmaker guys that were always, they always were playing with stars or someone, but they're definitely huge, huge guys.
Absolutely. The other guy was Joe Sakic, who I think had probably one of the best wrist shots that we've ever seen.
Yeah.
But not only that, I mean, the other endearing image I have of him is the 2001, I almost said Grey Cup, Stanley Cup championship game, the Game 7. And Gary Bettman hands the cup to Joe Sakic, and he hands it to Ray Bourque.
Yeah.
Which is just the epitome of class, I think.
Well, why didn't they give it directly to Bourque?
Well, I think because you give it to the captain and then...
Yeah. Give him temporary captaincy.
Actually, he was the alternate captain, so he probably could have. Yeah.
No, I really like Sakic. I thought he was always a very... he was a loyal player. It's awesome when you find a player that is like a franchise player for their career, like the Yzerman, Sakic kind of. Sakic never he finished with Colorado, right?
Yeah, so he was the same franchise because I mean he was with Quebec and then they moved. So,
that would be a good challenge. Is try to name. I bet we could count them on your hands. How many guys have played entirely for their one franchise as a Hall of Famer? Like there'd be Yzerman.
At least recently, because I think in the earlier, days of the NHL, that was pretty common. Like the Maple Leafs, for example, had their they would be able to protect junior players in a certain radius of Toronto, and basically those guys would play. Yeah, same with Montreal and Quebec. Let's see. So we got Mario Lemieux, Stevie Yzerman.
Has he been inducted into the Hall of Fame?
Oh, maybe not.
He should be. He's going to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking.
Did Ron Francis? No.
No, Francis played for like Hartford at one point, I think. He played. Oh, and Carolina.
Which is Carolina, same franchise.
Yeah, but he. He played for Pittsburgh for during the Stanley Cups.
Right. Correct.
He won like four Stanley Cups or something. Like he was on three teams.
Correct.
But he was all over the place. Try to think. Nick Lidstrom, when he's done, I think will be one of those guys.
Oh, absolutely.
He's not leaving Detroit.
No.
What about Lanny McDonald?
He started it out in Toronto. Okay. He played a number of seasons in Toronto.
Well, you know, one that I think probably would have if it wasn't for money, it would have been Wayne Gretzky. He would have stayed
and family, because I'm pretty sure his wife had something to do with that too.
Yeah.
Well, maybe, but Peter Pocklington also thought, hey, I can make a lot of money by selling him.
He sure did. He made like 15 million bucks or something?
Yeah.
Back in 1988? That's a lot. Yeah. I remember hearing back in like the mid-80s, the average payroll for a team was like $4 million a season or something.
Well, there's a reason why Pocklington isn't well-liked in Edmonton.
Really? That surprises me.
Why did shouldn't have let them those two get married in their basilica? I can't believe that.
It's not for the Andrews Basilica, but anyway.
Oh, you want to know what I just heard? Someone told me this story. Now I don't.
So Wayne Gretzky got married in 1988 in the St. Joseph Basilica in Edmonton.
That's right. So I want to actually go back on that for a second.
Okay,
I heard a story in the last couple of days. Because like Gretzky is actually a Polish name, but that I guess his grandmother was Catholic, and when she came over to Canada, she didn't speak a word of English. So she went to the nearest church, and it happened to be a high Anglican mass that there was going on. Well, she didn't speak English to know the difference that it was between Anglican and Catholic.
Yeah, 80% of Anglicans, that's how they became Anglican.
So she went to this high Anglican, Polish immigrants became Anglican, and so the Gretzkys became Anglican. But the good thing is that at least Wayne Gretzky got married in a Catholic church.
I don't know.
Wouldn't the Catholic churches have been in Latin? You could tell the difference between Latin and English? I don't know.
Not if you're Polish.
I guess it depends on when she came over.
Did the Anglicans not use English?
Anglicans all use all.
Well, once again, it depends.
By the way, this is awesome sports podcasting, isn't it?
No, but the Anglicans, Andrew, even before, before
the council, they were still in English. But if it was after the council, it could have been in English in both churches.
Well, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
I just don't know. I don't know the whole story.
That sound that we're hearing is of listeners hitting stop on their iPods. But anyway, because this has everything to do with sports.
Well, good riddance.
Oh, dear. So that's the NHL. And the Blue Jays just made a major 9-player trade with the Miami Marlins.
Okay.
Yeah. Including for a couple of starting pitchers and a starting... shortstop, I think.
They should have traded like 40 players. Just changed the whole roster.
Well, this is pretty close when you're trading that many guys around.
I know. That's amazing, eh? Like,
I don't even think they have their management situation set up yet.
They should trade managers too.
I think that was the rumor, wasn't it?
Oh, they were gonna?
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be weird, eh?
There's some sort of weird arrangement. I don't know. That's how much I follow Major League Baseball, I guess.
So Escobar only has a career batting average of .291?
Yes.
Wow, that's pretty bad.
Mind you, I gleaned that from a chat on TSN.ca, so take that with a grain of salt.
Ouch.
But, so that's the Toronto Blue Jays. So who knows? Maybe next year they might do more.
When's the last time either of you have watched a Blue Jays game?
in its entirety?
The whole game or just parts of it?
Oh, the whole game.
Probably 2004.
2004, okay, and then part
with,
of the game.
With the last lockout.
I've watched lots of parts of games, particularly the last three innings or something. I've actually, the only game I've ever watched from start to finish for baseball was when I was actually in Toronto and I went to the game. I've never watched a baseball game from start to finish in my life.
Wow.
I'm thinking for myself, the last time I watched a full game of baseball was during the back-to-back World Cup series.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was seeing
in the early 90s.
The World Series, yeah.
The World Series, yeah.
We are awesome fans of sports ball.
Well, it's kind of a sport.
It's a fun way to drink beer and watch.
In Australia, they call it rounders. Yeah.
I mean, it can get kind of exciting. That's a ringing endorsement if I ever heard one.
Not really.
NBA, the Raptors. I think the Raptors are not in last place. They're like third last or something. Things are looking up.
Oh, really?
And they actually won today, too. Who are they playing? They're playing somebody, and they won by like 2 points. It was like a 74-72 victory in the NBA.
Oh, yeah, the Pacers.
Yeah, yeah.
Indiana is apparently where those Pacers play.
Indiana wants me. All right. So I think we've hashed things around enough. Who are your picks for the two CFL playoff games coming up? First game, Toronto is in Montreal.
Not the whole city,
but I mean the players.
Montreal is going to win the Grey Cup again.
Okay. Father Andrew?
I sure hope Montreal doesn't win the Grey Cup again.
So who are you picking to win the East Final?
I don't really care.
Well, I didn't get your score there, Father Jeff. I don't care anymore. Father Jeff, what's your score?
Oh, jeez. Montreal's going to kill them. 35-23.
Okay.
I hope that the Argos will totally dominate Montreal and make me feel a little bit better.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to say it will be 42-26 Argos. Where did I get that score from? Anyway.
You know what, though? I think Montreal's vulnerable. I really do. Because their defense has been somewhat inconsistent all season long. I think we're in for a shootout. And you know what? I'm actually going to pick Toronto. I'm going to say 35-32. All right. Western final. We've got Calgary, sadly, in BC.
I agree with that sentiment.
Yeah. Father Jeff, what's your pick?
Is Drew Tate, is he going to be back?
Probably.
And in BC, who do they got in there?
Lule.
Lule's healthy.
Yeah, I think BC's going to win it. I guess I'm pretty sure it's BC Montreal final. I'm going to say 36-30.
That's good old consistency there.
Yeah.
All right, Father Andrew.
Hey, that sounded like my pick for the Eastern final. I'm going to say BC is going to actually win it. And it's going to be 32-24.
I also go with BC, and I think they're going to do fairly well. I'm going to say they're going to get 38 points, and Calgary is going to get 25. And that's what we'll be.
So we all picked BC?
We all picked BC. You're the only one who picked Montreal.
Okay. So do we got the stats up on the website now? Updated stats of our records?
Oh, no. No records.
We will compile that at the end of the playoffs, though, okay?
Okay.
Because I think I won last week, right? Because I picked Calgary and...
And you were very close. You picked, I think, 36-28, and they won 36-30, so...
Yeah, I think that was my best pick of all playoffs, but...
I was very proud of you last week.
Oh, sigh.
See, you know why I got it right? I stopped feeling from my heart, and I just used reason and... It's amazing. I was like, yeah, Ryder's going to make a good effort, but they're going to lose.
That reason, whatever, what good did that ever do? All right, on that happy note.
Okay.
This has been a lot of fun. Have a great evening.
Bye-bye.
See you later.
All right. Well, yeah, Daryl, we should start like, oh, geez, hold on. The beer's overflowing.
Oh, okay. I was like, that was pretty random.
Ah, that's expensive beer.
I think I just got my outtake for the day, though.
Top of the morning.